Good morning. I'm Judge Allen, and I'm joined by my colleagues this morning, Judge Toth on my right, Judge Jaquith on my left. And we are together to consider arguments in the case of Gilbert R. Duran against Dennis McDonough, Secretary of Veterans Affairs, case number 20-5759. Would counsel, beginning with appellant's counsel, please enter your appearance for the record?
Your Honor, Stephanie Bennett with my co-counsel, Montana Crowe, for Mr. Duran.
Thank you. Secretary?
Good morning, Your Honor. Nathan Bader on behalf of the Secretary for counsel.
Ms. Bennett, I understand you want to reserve some time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor, 10 minutes.
Well, we've got that set, so you can begin whatever you would like.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, the issue in this case is one of regulatory interpretation. We're asking this Court to vacate the Board's erroneous decision based on a misinterpretation of 38 CFR Section 4.124A, Diagnostic Code 8004. At the heart of this case is Mr. Duran, a combat veteran who earned a Purple Heart in Vietnam when he was shot in combat. His service there exposed him to Agent Orange, which led to the Parkinson's diagnosis at issue today. When the VA granted service connection in 2017 and assigned a 30% evaluation, the minimum under the diagnostic code, as well as special monthly compensation for loss of use of a creative organ, Mr. Duran appealed for an increased evaluation, believing that his symptoms were inadequately compensated by that minimum rating at the time. At that time of service connection, Mr. Duran was suffering from 4 identifiable symptoms of Parkinson's. By the time he reached the board 5 years later, he was suffering with more than 13. Despite the obvious increase in severity, the board decided to discontinue Mr. Duran's rating for Parkinson's and replace it with separate individual evaluations for each compensable symptom.
Could I jump in and just, I have 2 clarifying questions to make sure I understand the appellant's position. I just want to make sure I understand. Does it matter that to your regulatory interpretation argument that Mr. Duran initially was assigned the 30%, I'm going to call it sort of minimum rating, and then later conditions became greater?
Yes, Your Honor. It matters to our interpretation because our position is that his symptoms were not adequately compensated at the time by the 30%, and then it was discontinued later.
So let me approach it another way. I just want to assume that there was one residual of Parkinson's, just one, some form of radiculopathy or something, okay? At the time the rating is given, okay, at that moment, assume that that residual would be rated at 40%. Are you with me?
Yes.
Is your view of the regulation, the diagnostic code here, that a person with that, a single residual rateable at 40%, but it's a residual of Parkinson's, would be entitled to both a 30% rating and the 40% rating?
That is a complicated question, Your Honor, simply because I find it almost so implausible.
So work with me,
yes,
okay?
Sir.
Assume that that situation could exist. Now, maybe I'm describing a unicorn, meaning it doesn't exist. But maybe I'm describing a 3-legged dog. You don't see one every day, but they do exist, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
So assume that we have one residual. It is rateable at 40%. Is your view, and you don't win or lose on this, I just need to understand whether this is actually the appellant's view of the DC, that you would, with the one residual, be entitled to both a 30% and a 40%?
No, Your Honor.
Okay, so then work me through how you get to the answer to that question based on the regulation, right? but yet also based on the regulation, when we get to Mr. Duran's situation, which has more than one symptom or manifestation, you get to a different result.
Because of the question of ascertainable residuals, Your Honor. So in order to be rated under the diagnostic code for Parkinson's itself, that 30% minimum, there has to be ascertainable residuals. If he were separately rated for his only symptom, if this the hypothetical here is that this veteran is rated for his only symptom of Parkinson's, separately rated, and has no other ascertainable residuals, then he would not actually be entitled to the minimum evaluation.
What about, a person like Parkinson's, as I understand, which could easily be wrong, disclaimer, you're diagnosed with the condition, and then it may take a while until maybe some of the residuals manifest. Like, what happens the day after you're diagnosed? Would you be entitled to the minimum rating?
Your Honor, respectfully, my understanding is the opposite of that, that to be diagnosed with Parkinson's, you have to have ascertainable symptoms of Parkinson's. Most often it starts with a tremor in the hand. That's what happened with Mr. Duran. Evidently that is a pretty common manifestation.
So the let's say the first 10% residual might be a kind of doorway to a diagnosis, and would that would get you to the 30%?
Yes,
like a single residual plus a diagnosis kind of gets you to the minimum rating?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
And then to follow up with this, okay, let's just assume that, assume you have your cluster of five residuals, okay, and you are diagnosed with Parkinson's. None of those five conditions would be rateable above 30%. Matter of fact, let's say none of them would be rateable at all. So you have a basket of these things, and it seems to me both the Secretary and you would agree that the person gets a 30% rating, right? Or at least you can agree with that, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. So is your position that as long as one of those five conditions remains under 30%, right, even if all the other four get above, you continue to keep the 30% to account for the one residual that hasn't reached a 30% level? Am I now approaching your understanding of the DC?
Yes, Your Honor. And may I add to that answer?
Sure.
So the reason that I talked about the plausibility before is because that is correct. If there is one remaining ascertainable residual that is not compensated under another alternative diagnostic code, it would be appropriate to continue the 30% minimum. However, the plausibility factor has to come in here because Parkinson's is progressive. As we've seen, Mr. Duran exemplifies this. He has gone from four identifiable symptoms of this disease to arguably 16 if you count each one of his limbs individually.
So how does it work practically? It's kind of a background question. Does the veteran remain kind of in contact with raters so they can update the residuals annually, maybe as they progress? Like, how does the veteran stay in contact with VA so they can continue to evaluate as they develop?
In this case, it was primarily through CMP exams and his medical records through the VA.
How frequently are the ratings updated to kind of account for the progression of the symptoms?
In this case, it was a straight line appeal from the service connection in 2017 to the board decision in 2020. The board decision was he had appealed directly to the board. I'm not sure I'm quite understanding your question, Your Honor.
So from the moment he presented, you said he presented five,
initially? Five. Four identifiable symptoms.
And then 16 later at some stage. You're more up to date on just the timelines and the facts than I do, so maybe I'm just kind of plumbing for some of this. But between that period of 5 and 16, was there any intermittent ratings?
No, Your Honor. The first time that his ratings changed from the time that he was service-connected to the board decision was at the board decision, and that was when they discontinued the minimum and replaced with the symptoms that they could put under an alternative diagnostic code.
Okay, and that was, you said 3 years?
Took
3 years?
5 years.
5 years? Okay.
And you don't challenge the, as I read the brief, you don't challenge the deny, the board's denial of, or the VA's denial of separate ratings for the other conditions, the constipation, chewing, swallowing, loss of smell, and speech.
Only in the sense that those should remain under the 30% minimum. So it's a yes and a no. We don't challenge that those individual alternative ratings should have been placed, should have been service-connected, but we do challenge that they should have remained under the catch-all.
Right, and again, I just want to make sure I understand this. And if all of those dropped out as the disease progresses, except for loss of smell, okay, you still have a non-compensable loss of smell, but everything else has a rating of something. The position would be you still get the 30% for loss of smell.
Yes, Your Honor. And we believe that the reason that the regulation is written that way is because for every symptom that rises to the level that it can be compensated under an alternative diagnostic code, there's going to be a parade of symptoms behind it. Parkinson's is, by its nature, progressive. There's always going to be additional symptoms coming behind. So as his disease progresses and his individual symptoms are taken out and individually rated, then he'll have a whole line of other symptoms that are being compensated, continuing to be compensated by this 30% evaluation, the minimum. That's why we think that it should remain in place. Because even if it's just a loss of smell today, tomorrow it could be five other things. It could be that he, you know, loses his ability to walk, that he loses his ability to swallow, that he loses his ability to speak entirely. So when analyzing this regulation, the silence tells the story. This court said in Atencio that when assessing the meaning of a regulation, words shouldn't be taken in isolation, but rather read in the context of the regulatory structure and scheme. This also speaks to our interpretation of 8004 in this case, because other diagnostic codes do provide situations where a singular rating like this one could be replaced or could be discontinued, and this diagnostic code is not written that way. An example of this is kidney removal. Diagnostic code 7500 provides for a 30% evaluation like Parkinson's. However, it also says that it should be rated as renal dysfunction if nephritis, infection, or pathology of the other kidney is present. So that or there, the 30% or rate as this alternative is significant because it's something that the drafters in this regulation for Parkinson's could have done. They could have said a 30% minimum, or if the symptoms reach this level of severity, it should be rated this other way. In this case, they just didn't do that. Another example is prostate cancer, which has a singular rating also for 100% as long as cancer is present. As soon as treatment ceases, that 100% is gone and it's replaced by residuals. That's another way that they could have written this Parkinson's diagnosis or under the diagnostic code. And our final example is HIV under 6351, which provides staged ratings. Again, had the drafters of this regulation wanted to draft it in another way to provide for alternative ratings, they could have done so. And instead, they provided only one evaluation and no language to discontinue. To us, that means that this 30% minimum was meant to remain in place as a floor to catch all of the symptoms of Parkinson's that have not yet risen to the level where they can be individually compensated.
I'm intrigued by the examples you just gave, and to channel Judge Toth, I may just be missing this, but did you discuss those examples in your brief?
No, Your Honor.
Why not?
They weren't explicitly in our brief, but the arguments that we made in our brief were speaking to the diagnostic code and speaking to the language of the diagnostic code, and we believe that these diagnostic codes simply exemplify the broader theories within our brief.
Just in the future, it's helpful not just to the other party, right, because this may be the first time Mr. Bader is hearing these. It's certainly the first time I am, and I've been preparing for this case for a while. So it would just be helpful, right, because that's an important argument. Let me ask you this. Why should we interpret the code the way you've articulated, right, which is basically, and tell me if I get this wrong, because I want to make sure I have it right, because I'm going to ask Secretary the similar questions. It seems to me that your position is we have a 30%. That's going to always exist so long as any residual is not compensated.
Yes,
right?
Sir.
Okay. Now, you'd agree with me, right, that if all of the remaining ones, the chewing, swallowing, et cetera, say they were all rated at 10%, so there was nothing left uncompensated, you'd agree then that the 30% would go away?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. All right. So that's one plausible interpretation. What would be wrong with another one, saying that what we do is we look at this and we say, VA has made the determination that we should have a minimum 30%. And so if a combination of individually rating each of the manifestations don't get you to at least, or get you to more than 30, okay, we're going to keep the 30 in place. Right? But once you sort of get to the point where you're above 30, we turn the light switch off, meaning the 30% light switch off, and we do what we would normally do, which is just rate all of the other conditions and whatever you come to, 0 for some, 10 for others, 40 for others, is what you end up with. You see what I mean?
I think I'm following you, and I hope I can answer that question effectively. If I'm understanding you correctly, I don't agree that that is what we normally do. Or I do agree that that's what we normally do for the, for separate symptoms. But it's important to remember in this case that these other diagnostic codes are not for other conditions. They're all for symptoms of Parkinson's. And so when we're talking about Parkinson's, there's always going to be, and I suppose always is a very encompassing term, but for the most part, Parkinson's is always going to come with these myriad of symptoms that have not yet progressed to the point where they are severe enough to be individually rated under an alternative diagnostic code like the ones that were rated by the board. So our position is that in order to fully compensate for Parkinson's disease itself, that 30% minimum has to remain in place to provide the catch-all. Because otherwise he's not being compensated for all these other symptoms, and the board even discussed a number of them, where the board said that difficulty speaking under the alternative diagnostic code of 8210, he couldn't be rated because he had not reached the level of severity for that individual rating. But the fact is that that's merely a symptom of Parkinson's. Like, he doesn't have paralysis of the 10th cranial nerve under 8210. The catch-all is for all these symptoms of Parkinson's that admittedly cannot be individually rated, but they still cause him significant disability in the aggregate. They come together to cause his Parkinson's to disable him. And in this case, discontinuing that 30% rating has left him undercompensated. He's not being compensated for all these other symptoms. And the final thing that we'll bring up is that the board's interpretation here has caused undue confusion in the sense that going back to the diagnostic codes that we were just talking about, the difficulty speaking under 8210, the board discussed that diagnostic code and discussed difficulty speaking as a separate diagnostic code. They named the diagnostic code, and they said that Mr. Duran did not qualify for that diagnostic code. We believe that that is a problem because, particularly for pro se veterans, just the practical application of this is that in the future, if Mr. Duran were not represented and wanted to go, his difficulty speaking rose to the level where he thought that he would be able to get service connected for it or get an increase for it, he wouldn't know how to file that. he wouldn't know whether to file it as paralysis of the 10th cranial nerve, as the board has now analyzed it, or whether he files it as an increase for Parkinson's. Just on a practical matter, the board's interpretation, it's inconsistent with the regulation, as we've already kind of gone over, but it also is just practically untenable. It's confusing for pro se veterans. Your Honor, I see that I have about 45 seconds left. If there are no further questions, I will yield the remainder of my time and go for rebuttal.
Do you have any questions? Thanks very much.
Your Honor.
And we'll hear argument from the Secretary, Mr. Bader.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Nathan Bader, and I represent the Secretary in this matter. We can go right into DC 8004 and look at why, first, that the board correctly defined its plain meaning, and then alternatively, even if it if the court finds that the meaning is not plain, that it should defer to the board's interpretation. So we begin with the text of the regulation. It's pretty short. It doesn't really give a lot of instruction other than saying minimum rating, 30%. The important thing for this diagnostic code is its context. So we look at the beginning of the regulation actually has a note to it that applies to a number of the regulations in this subsection. And in his brief, appellant talks about this in addition to exceptional importance language, these clauses from that note as indicating that the 30% rating should continue and these other ratings that the boards have assigned should continue on. We haven't heard anything about that in argument, so I'm not really sure whether that's a position that's remaining on. But the Secretary views that as merely providing coding instruction as we stated in our brief. This is not instruction to add anything to anything else. It's describing how to rate the various residuals and keep them connected to that Parkinson's disease diagnosis. We then look to the preamble of section 4.124A, which is the section that contains DC 8004. It talks about assigning ratings for the various residuals in proportion to their impairment of motor, sensory, and mental function and referring to the appropriate bodily system of the schedule.
So, Counsel, I want to back you up a tiny bit to the just go through that full sentence. It says, with the exceptions noted, disability from the following diseases and their residuals may be rated from 10% to 100%. So the and there, I mean, they could have said or, they said and. I want to discuss that. And also, is there an, it says, with the exceptions noted. So is there an exception that's noted in the text, or is it the disabilities and their residuals? You know, that the reg contemplates that they would be rated together.
Secretary's position that the regulation is discussing these residuals. So you are, and I think we'll get to that a little later. The way that appellant conceives of rating Parkinson's disease is a little dissonant with the purpose of the rating schedule itself. So if we look to that, the purpose of the rating schedule is very simply to accurately compensate veterans based on the average impairment in earning capacity that they suffer from whatever disability they're suffering. It's not perfect, but it's the Secretary's best attempt at finding that value. The 30% minimum rating, effectively, as Judge Allen was discussing, it sets the baseline for any particular disability would always be 0%, that it doesn't cause any disabling effects, and then evidence will show that it does, you'll receive a rating. The reason this 30% minimum exists is because VA is recognizing, the Secretary recognizes that Parkinson's disease is a very serious disease, it's progressive, it's degenerative, and in the initial stages, as Your Honors were noting, it can be hard to identify these various residuals. They may come and go, they may increase in severity or reduce, we may, as the board has found with its undisputed factual findings, we may find some non-compensable, some may receive 10, 20% rating. But that's going to be hard to nail down, let's say, in a medical examination, because they're going to move. And again, they might stay for quite some time in that possibly.
I mean, I want to pick up on Ms. Bennett's sort of final line of argument, which is that, you know, this could have been constructed very differently. I mean, for instance, I mean, you look at the reg immediately preceding, the DC immediately preceding, and it just basically says rate residuals, comma, minimum 10%. Why not just have drafted it rate residuals, comma, minimum 30%? I mean, it seems a much easier way to give exactly what you're describing here, which is you basically rate on residuals, but, you know, if you fall short of that, it would get you up to 30%.
Understandably, Your Honor, we're not suggesting that this regulation is perfectly written. We wouldn't be here today if there wasn't some area for different interpretations.
No, but I want to kind of keep my first question, maybe, and we can kind of return to it, which is, you know, it's a conjunctive with the exceptions noted. Okay, so we're going to look for exceptions. Disability from the following diseases and their residuals may be rated. Okay, so and means you can rate both the disability and the residuals in conjunction with each other. If they said or, then it might be, I think that would be, you know, you'd have a clear game-winning argument there because it would be, okay, you get one or you get the other. But here's and that I think that presents a bit of an obstacle for you, so.
Well, as we view it, so you are getting compensation for your Parkinson's disease disability, the disability itself, and the residuals. The way that 30% minimum works is that, again, you have not achieved any combined rating greater than 30%, so you receive that minimum rating, as the regional office did in its original rating decision. It described that the 30% rating would be applied because it considered all the various residuals and found them to not rise above that level.
I mean, this might be an in-depth question. Just mechanically speaking, like say someone were to say, you know, under the duty to maximize benefits, I would rather have 30% for Parkinson's and then be secondarily service connected for everything, all the attendant sort of conditions that you could, you know, have a nexus that are basically caused by the Parkinson's. Would one yield a greater rating than the other, a greater amount of compensation than the other?
Well, so again, if the instructions from the note to the to DC 8004 and again to the preamble instruct on how to rate these residuals as connected to Parkinson's disease. Again, that the 30% minimum is I think the key here is that it's compensation for all of appellant's Parkinson's disease at that stage. I think that's where appellant and I disagree is that. At that stage, we're not rating any individual residual. We're saying that the entire package is receiving a 30% rating because it's a degenerative disease and it's serious. VA is recognizing that. Because the Secretary is determining that it's going to be hard to figure out exactly how much how to evaluate these conditions. So we're going to award a 30% rating because that's the average impairment and earning capacity at that stage. Once you receive a combined rating, once you can achieve a combined rating in excess of 30%, you're not bound by that 30%. You're able to go above that, and whatever combined rating you get, you get. You combine them all together and achieve whatever rating.
I could be wrong. You guys understand the kind of mechanics of this far better than I do, but, you know, my understanding is once you have a diagnosis of Parkinson's and then you have some residuals, right, you know, that's not going away, right? You could add residuals secondarily. You could say, listen, I don't want to be rated under this DC. I would rather just get my 30%, and then for every attendant symptom that has a nexus, I'd prefer secondary consideration, because then my 30% rating is not going away. Did you understand that?
I understand that, Your Honor. It's a little contrary to what that note is saying and to what the preamble is saying. So I think it's a little different question, and admittedly that was not briefed by appellant, so you know, I'd be happy to answer that further for the question.
One of the duties that the board has is to maximize benefits. I mean, if one means of compensation presents a clearly more favorable situation, I mean, is that, like, to me it strikes me that's something they at least would have to explore.
Certainly, Your Honor, and I think, and as I'll continue to explain, I don't think that appellant's position is anywhere in the world of a reasonable view of compensating appellant, so his compensation, the duty to maximize benefits doesn't really apply here because this 30% is not being taken away. It's not something that was, it's not separate and apart from this entire scope of compensation for the Parkinson's disease. So if we look at what actually happened. Appellant received a combined rating of 50%.
But Mr. Bader, isn't it generally true that if a separate rating doesn't compensate the same manifestation of the disease as the residual rating, both may be applied without violating the pyramiding regulation?
Yes. So what we are looking at here is that this, I think Judge Allen used this basket picture of whether these other symptoms that weren't assigned a compensable rating in the board's decision. It carefully considered all of them. Its factual findings and analysis are not disputed. So the board, in appellant's view, accurately determined the average impairment in earning capacity for his Parkinson's disease, all of the residuals. We were left with...
Quite right. The board didn't consider all of them. There were some that were not addressed. There were three, I think, that were determined to be non-compensable, but there were three or four others that weren't mentioned.
As I read the record, Your Honor, and the board's decision, the board addressed all of the evidence, the medical evidence that supported ratings under the various diagnostic codes. And again, we don't have argument from appellant that any of this was erroneous, that there were any issues that were left unaddressed, any symptoms, other than today.
Well, no. I mean, the argument is that the unaddressed, uncompensated are the residuals that the veteran deserves compensation for by the 30% minimum rating. They're addressed.
So to the extent that appellant would have an argument that the board failed to address certain symptoms, certain residuals in this decision, this wasn't made, and if he wants to make that argument, he can file some additional claims with VA to try to get those compensated. But as of now, the board didn't do that. If we focus on the, I think a good example is focusing on the claims that the board did address. So some were given compensable ratings and some were rated non-compensable. Appellant believes that those non-compensable ratings stay in that 30% basket and keep that 30% going. But if you look at the actual text of the regulation, it is a compensation, 30% minimum, for Parkinson's disease. It doesn't say that basket of claims that remain that were rated non-compensable. So it appears that we are rating, we are going to be compensating the same symptomatology twice if we are putting the Parkinson's disease rating, 30%, and these compensable and non-compensable ratings together. But I think just as important is that, again, we have undisputed factual findings that these various other symptoms, which were found to be non-compensable, are not compensable. So it's paradoxical, then, to say that they are undisputedly not compensable under the appropriate diagnostic code, and yet they should still receive compensation under this minimum. And I think a good example of this, and as appellant's counsel, this is not actually in our brief, but I think it's a good analogy is to another diagnostic code, which is for total knee replacement. So that diagnostic code provides, and it's 5055, it provides a minimum 30% rating for a total knee replacement, recognizing that no matter what, that's going to cause that much impairment in earning capacity. It's a pretty big surgery. It's going to limit your ability to work. It does have a stepwise increase in ratings available, 60% for more severe symptoms. I think it's 100% for effectively convalescence. And it also instructs to rate other symptoms by analogy if there are others that don't quite fit, that they can be rated by analogy to other diagnostic codes. That sort of scheme works in the realm of a knee replacement because, again, we're recognizing the seriousness of the condition. We're providing a stepwise increase in the rating if you can meet these higher criteria because a knee replacement is sort of a knowable universe of what that's going to do to you and the symptomatology that's going to come from that. It doesn't work for Parkinson's disease because it can have innumerable different effects, which is exactly why the code is written this way and why we see in the note and in the preamble to Section 4.214A references to rating with reference to the appropriate body part or system, rating with reference to the level of motor sensory mental impairment caused, because there would be no way for the official drafting this diagnostic code to list out all of the various potential symptoms and create effectively something more than that 30%, like a 40% for a particular symptom.
Could I jump in? What does one do if I see both positions, particularly as articulated this morning, to be plausible. I think it would be quite plausible to have a diagnostic code where you said, this is a progressive disease that has many different symptoms. We understand that when it starts out, you're not even going to necessarily know what it is that you're diagnosed with Parkinson's, but I'm having trouble swallowing. Is that because I have a cold or is it Parkinson's, right? So we're going to start with this 30%. This is your position, I think. And then we're going to say we're going to keep the 30%. We're never going to go below 30%. And then the moment that we trigger something that gets you above 30%, whether a single symptom or a combination of rateable symptoms, I think the Secretary's position is then, okay, we turn off that minimum rating because now we're in a world where we're all comfortable rating. And so we're going to have some things that are non-compensable. We're going to have others that are minimally compensable. We might have others that are higher compensable, and we'll just do it there. And we just turned off the rating. We've triggered it. Is that sort of fair for your position?
That's exactly correct, John.
Okay. To me, that's quite plausible. It's also plausible, as refined a little bit this morning, that what happens is Parkinson's is this weird disease that has this cluster of symptoms. We're never going to be able to get our hands around all of them at any point in time. So, like that motel chain, we're going to leave the light on with the 30% rating, right? We're going to leave it on. It's always going to be on as long as there's something that is a Parkinson's residual that remains uncompensated under the schedule. So in other words, it's not like we're going to ever turn that off until every residual gets compensated. And so just because you're above 430 on one residual, if you've got some others that are still under 30, you're not double counting because you're taking that one, you're not counting the 40% one, right? You're only counting the ones that are uncompensable. That's how I understand appellant's position to be. That's also, to me, quite a plausible way in which one could decide to rate this condition. How do you suggest, assuming that I see it that way, how do you suggest I go about analytically choosing between those two plausible positions?
Well, let's look at what happens if we keep that minimum rating. Again, I've already mentioned it, but it's necessarily going to be compensating those conditions that have gone before it, those others that are in a combined way rated higher than 30%, because, again, this is a rating for paralysis agitans, Parkinson's disease by analogy. It doesn't say anything about separating these conditions out, about leaving things behind. It just is for Parkinson's disease. So we are effectively keeping at least some of those compensable symptoms in that basket, and there's no way practically to separate those out unless you did exactly what the board did here, which is to rate everything separately, and if appellant has further claims to be made, he has further symptoms, he raises that to VA, and they are included and continue to be rated as the diagnostic code instructs as connected
to the extent that poses a problem, that's a drafting choice the Secretary made.
Again, Your Honor, yes, I agree that this could have been stated more clearly, but I believe that the board's position follows the plainer reading of the regulation than does appellants. And let's think about it another way. So, again, if we look back to that knee replacement example, no one would ever suggest that that minimum knee replacement rating would stay once you've met the 60% rating because you just have these higher level of symptoms and you're being accurately rated. You are being given the compensation that reflects the average impairment in earning capacity for that level.
But a better analogy is the straight knee ratings where you have residuals based on knee surgery that remain compensable even when you have other potential residuals that get their own ratings. We just emphasized that point in Wallaman a few months ago.
And so I would say that the another concern about this is sort of the practical concern. When we would try to rate this, we have all of appellant's symptoms already broken out, rated, assigned, you know, based on their various diagnostic codes, assigned their ratings. What would this 30% be connected to? There's no service-connected condition other than Parkinson's disease generally, which is already broken out per the diagnostic code into all of these various residuals. So we have
the uncompensated residuals, just like in knee surgery.
Again, Your Honor, if after the board, after we've exceeded this 30% minimum, it's our position that it becomes incumbent upon appellant or if there's new evidence submitted that these new residuals would be addressed just as the board did here by the regional office, of course, but addressed as they come along. So they would eventually be rated, maybe assigned compensable ratings, and go that route. It is not, we would not agree that this 30% rating would just hang around forever, continually compensating things that might come along. Once you exceed that 30% minimum, your Parkinson's disease is now rated as any other disability would be rated. And again, the purpose of that 30% minimum is effectively to raise the floor from that 0% that everybody, that most disabilities would be utilizing, raising that floor because of the seriousness of the condition. And in those early stages, when we don't have a lot of residuals or they're not quite to that 30% level of disability rating, giving them a rating anyway, because we recognize that this is at that stage causing you impairment in earning capacity. And again, the purpose of, to go back to the purpose of the rating schedule, this is giving appellant the most accurate compensation for his disability. If we include that 30% as well, again, like as I mentioned, we're compensating those already compensated conditions, and it doesn't square with the correct average impairment in earning capacity that the board has undisputedly already assigned to all of these various conditions.
That's where it jumps the track. You're not compensating the already compensated conditions. You're compensating the things that haven't been compensated. And, you know, the board stated a very clear and concise rule. It just hasn't had any support in the regulation, in the diagnostic codes, or in your M21-1.
So, Judge,
you should write a rule like that if that's the way it should be, but that's not how it is.
Well, that's with the remainder of my time, I think we can turn to if the court would find that the language of DC 8004 is not plain, then it should defer to the board's interpretation of the language under the Supreme Court's.
Could be, you were going to say Kaiser, right? The Supreme Court's interpretation in Kaiser and Auer?
Auer, yes.
Okay. So, because I'm interested in this issue. So, first of all, you said we should defer to the board. Did you really mean what you just said, that we should defer to the board?
To the secretary's interpretation of his own regulation.
Okay, so because this is a really tricky part of administrative law, right? So what would you point me to as the thing to which we would defer?
To the board's view of DC 8004.
Okay, so remember, Justice Kagan in Kaiser, that's a tongue twister for you, right? She says that, you know, that the interpretation has to, she says, emanate from those actors using those vehicles understood to make authoritative policy in the relevant context, right? So the board's decision doesn't appear to fit that, right? Because, I mean, it says right at the end of every board decision, it actually says here on R22, right? It says, the board's decision in this case is binding only with respect to the instant matter decided. The decision is not precedential and does not establish VA policies or interpretations of general applicability. So it seems to me that, do you agree that the board decision itself couldn't qualify for Kaiser Auer deference?
It's our position that, at very least, that the board's interpretation is consistent, as we stated in our brief, with the manual and with the longstanding.
Right, no, and I don't mean to be persnickety here, right, and I'm not challenging, right? This is really complicated because it used to be that an agency could just breeze into court, maybe with an amicus brief. That's what happened in Auer itself. It was an amicus brief in the Seventh Circuit concerning a Department of Labor issue, okay? And for a while, the federal court seemed to say, oh, okay, you're going to point me to the brief, right? And then in Kaiser, the Supreme Court says, no. it's got to be something that we're going to be able to say is an authoritative statement of the agency, right? So it can't just be a brief, so you can't point me to your brief in this case. It seems to me inconsistent with what the board says that you would defer to the board as an authoritative statement when it says this isn't an authoritative statement, because that leaves us with only one thing, right? The M21.
Understandable, Your Honor, and, you know, again, it just... We didn't get a reply from appellant to our brief, so to the extent that this issue, this argument was going to have been raised by appellant, you know, we didn't really have a chance to prepare for it today. But
But you raised the argument about Kaiser deference, right?
That's right. Yes.
Okay. So because you've got to be able to point me to something that says this is the authoritative statement of the agency, right? It can't be your brief in litigation. I can't see how it's actually the board. I'm not aware of the Department of Justice, the Solicitor General, or the VA ever taking the position that the board's decision itself is one to which a federal court must defer. So that would be a brand new position. Because that would have meant that in Kaiser itself, the Supreme Court should have deferred to the board, right? So then it leaves only what you discuss in your brief, which is the M21. So do you agree that that's what we would defer to, the M21?
Well, I don't want to so when we look at the plain meaning analysis, the Secretary doesn't believe that the board needed to, for instance, cite the manual. It didn't need to cite that as support because it could interpret the regulation on its own. So I think that's the
yes, and I am really sorry to be trying to be so precise, okay? What you just said though, right, is not an analysis under our deference, right? It's an analysis of whether the board violated perhaps some of our other cases, Healy, Overton, by not referring to this manual, although this manual provision would not be helpful to the appellant, right? So arguably, if the board had simply said, oh, look at the manual provision, that would have been inconsistent with Healy because it's adopted a negative position, or Overton actually would have been. So it's not a question of deference, right? But my point is, if you're asking us to defer, what you're actually saying is, hey, guys, you're in black robes up there, and you normally get to say what the law is, Marbury versus Madison. But here, you don't get to say what the law is. You only get to say that the Secretary's considered judgment is reasonable. Okay? That's all you do, in the ballpark. That's very different than saying what the law is. But if you do that, then you have to be able to point to an authoritative interpretation, not something in the ether, literally like something I can hold in my hands. Right? I'm telling you, I don't think that can be the board decision because it says it's not authoritative. It might be right, but we'd have to independently say it's right. And so the only other thing to which you cite is the Adjudication Procedures Manual. So are you asking us to defer under our to the Adjudication Procedure Manual?
No, as we explained in the brief, the deference is accorded to the board's interpretation. I understand Your Honor disagrees with that and finds that not authoritative, but that's as we stated it.
So I just want to be clear because that's important, because I think so the Secretary is today arguing, I just want to be clear about this, the position of the Secretary is that federal courts must defer to the board's interpretation of what it understands a genuinely ambiguous regulation to be.
That's what we stated in our brief, Your Honor, and that's...
And so the United States would take that position before the Federal Circuit, and the Solicitor General, do you think, would take that position before the Supreme Court?
I'm not sure, Your Honor.
How do you then reconcile the fact that every board decision says it's not stating the position of the authoritative position of the Secretary?
I admit that is, you know, I understand Your Honor's position.
Okay, so just to wrap this up, You're not asking us to defer to the adjudication procedure manual.
That's correct, yes.
And you are taking the position that we should defer to the board's decision as a matter of our/Kaiser deference.
Yes, Your Honor, and I understand that you...
No, fair enough.
Yes.
I've got the position, sir.
And I have just a minute left. I wanted to address just a few of appellant's arguments from their brief and then a little bit as was raised today. So it's suggested in the brief and then again today that appellant's compensation was reduced. This is not the case. So in the board's own decision, it increased his compensation for his Parkinson's disease from 30% to 50%. And if we look back at the original appeal documents from his attorneys filed with VA, they don't talk about any of this, please keep my 30% rating. So none of these arguments are actually before the board. But his overall compensation also stayed the same. He had a combined 80% rating, and that stayed the same. So there's no question of a reduction in this case. And the only relief appellant is seeking here is additional reasons or bases from the board explaining its decision to replace the diagnostic code, the minimum rating under the diagnostic code. The board's analysis is clear. It's not terribly long because it probably viewed this as a pretty uncontroversial proposition. This is the way the Parkinson's disease diagnostic code has been the same for many, many years. So it didn't say more, but it has no more to say. It stated its position as to the diagnostic code, demanding for further analysis from them would be unhelpful and wouldn't serve any real purpose. So, unless there are any further questions from the court.
Thanks very much, Mr. Bader. Ms. Bennett, you have some rebuttal time.
Respectfully, I don't read the note and preamble to say the same thing that Mr. Bader does. In this case, this is a conflict between two sides, one of which is reading the plain language of the regulation with no additional language, and one that is asking you to read in additional language. The Secretary's position here is that the note and preamble somehow add to the regulation that the minimum rating should be replaced, and it simply does not. There is no language in either the preamble or the note for 4.124A that say anything about replacing this minimum evaluation. If that is how the drafters of this regulation wanted it to be written, it would have been easy to add that language. As Judge Toth was saying, that the and language, with the exceptions noted, the disability from the following diseases and their residuals may be rated from 10% to 100% in proportion of impairment.
Could I ask you a question about remedy? So if I were to agree with your position about what the regulation means, I would have thought that the remedy you would have asked the court to order on this claim would be a reversal of the board and a remand for the board to assign a 30% rating. I'm just a little unclear, because if you asked as the remedy for a reasons or bases, that would suggest that we could remand and the board could say something on this factual record to still say no. But I'm trying to understand, if I adopted your view of the regulation, how the board could say anything that would be right. So what am I missing that caused you to ask as a remedy for a reasons or bases remand as opposed to a reversal? Because I would have thought, if you're right, and the mere fact that I'm asking this, I'm just concerned that now I'm missing something in your argument, because otherwise I'm not sure why the remedy would be reasons or bases.
Sure, Your Honor, and hopefully I can clear that up for you, because the reasons and bases factored there would be if this court can correct the board on their misinterpretation of the regulation, their reasons and bases would inevitably have to change. The reason we ask for the vacator and the remand here is that functionally we don't see much of a difference. If the regulation is clear to the board, then their reasoning has to change.
Well, here's the point, right? That would suggest that then the board has more reasoning to do, and that's what I'm trying to figure out. Assume that you win, so you don't have to argue to me anymore about your view of the regulation, right? Meaning 30%, as long as you got uncompensated residuals left over, you get minimum 30%, right? That's your view of the regulation, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Are there facts that the board would need to find on this record that would be something that we could send it back for them to decide whether to grant the 30% rating? It seems to me the record seems to be there are uncompensated residuals. I think Judge Jakewith was pointing to that. If we adopt your view of the regulation, wouldn't our remedy be to reverse and order that there be a 30% rating?
Your Honor, if that is what you believe is right, I believe you have the authority to do so. But functionally, like I said, our position was that either way we get to the same result. If this court can...
Well, but if we remand... So if you don't want reversal, that's fine. I just need to... remember, right now, this is the definition of a friendly question to you.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Would the appellant be okay with an order that instead of saying, board, you need to better explain why you didn't give a 30% rating, would appellant be okay with an order that remands to, say, assign a 30% rating?
Yes, Your Honor.
Excellent. That's what, because somebody, one of us has to write something down.
Yes, Your Honor.
And so we got to tell the board what to do. Second question I have for you on rebuttal. I'm sorry, I have two questions on rebuttal. Would your logic about how the Parkinson's rating system work apply to that whole family of DCs?
Yes, Your Honor. There's actually five. There's three that are rarely spoken of. They're all degenerative muscular or nerve conditions. And they're all written identically. MS is the most common one. Yes, since they're all written identically, I don't see how they could possibly be interpreted differently. To address a few of Mr. Bader's points, I wanted to go over, he had said that he was concerned, or I guess he didn't say this explicitly, but he seemed concerned with overcompensation in this case, or possibly even pyramiding. I just wanted to make the point here that this is actually a really exemplary case where this is the exact opposite of pyramiding. As we have discussed, there are 9, arguably 10 symptoms here that are just simply not being compensated, and they're all symptoms of Parkinson's. Regardless of which conditions can be put into an analogous diagnostic code and separately rated, he's still not being compensated for the residuals of Parkinson's or the symptoms of Parkinson's that he currently has, and he has more symptoms not being compensated currently, far more symptoms, in fact, than are currently being compensated. The fact that his combined evaluation for those compensated symptoms has now put him at 50%, that combination, if we look to how that actually works within his combined evaluation overall, he didn't move. He stayed at 80%. So the fact that he's being overcompensated is a little unfounded and, frankly, a little unfair for a regulation that is written very simply and very plainly to compensate people who are going to degenerate until they die. I think that this regulation doesn't require any more language because it's there to be considered a floor, a catch-all, and I think we both agree that it is a floor. It's just we don't want to take the floor away. I don't know that I have a whole lot to say about the deference argument. I think that was discussed, that obviously we don't agree that the board should have any deference here, and I think, as you said, the board seems to agree. So I don't know that we have a whole lot to go into there. But I did want to address the knee replacement. As Judge Jaquith said, an individual knee can be compensated in three or four different ways, one knee. So that actually exemplifies what we're saying. Separate individual manifestations of as one disease or one body part can be compensated, and that's not pyramiding. I think that's very similar in Mr. Duran's case because he has a myriad of symptoms that aren't being compensated, and they should be, and they can only be compensated with this 30% evaluation. Your Honors, if there are no more questions, I just want to say that the board erred by discontinuing the minimum rating for Parkinson's here, as we've discussed today. Again, we're asking that the court vacate the board's decision and remand to correct that mistake and also provide guidance to the board on how to interpret this regulation correctly. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thanks very well. I do want to say thank you on behalf of the court to both Ms. Bennett and Mr. Bader. I've been told by our intrepid clerk of court that today was both your first oral arguments before the court, and I thought you did a very nice job. It was very helpful to the court, and so I want to thank you. With that, we'll come down and greet counsel, and the case is submitted.